Hello, my name's Kate Rowles and I'm interviewing you for the Wellcome Trust as you're taking part in Anthony Gormley's artwork One and Other. The date today is the 21st of August 2009 and the time is 9:25 p.m. If I can please ask you to say your full name, your age and your date of birth and where you come from.
Yeah. My name is Raymond Bowie. I was born on the 5th of August 1961 and I live in London. I'm from London.
And how are you today?
I'm very well, very happy to be here, very excited.
Fantastic. What was it that motivated you to take part in One Another?
I've been along to the square on many occasions and seen other plinthers doing their thing and was totally inspired by it. I just wondered out of curiosity how it would feel to be up there. And so that's what prompted me to apply.
And here you are. How did you decide how to use your hour on the plinth?
Prior to my knowing about the plinth, I'd been working on a little campaign of mine, which I'm going to be talking about during my hour. And it had been dragging its heels a little bit. And then the plinth came along and I thought, what a great way to air my thoughts. And hopefully make other people think about it in the same way.
What is the project that you're working on?
The project is to raise public awareness around the world of the continued dangers of tobacco and the power that the tobacco companies have over all of us and the Treasury's failure to address it.
And why this particular issue?
My parents both passed away, sadly, and they both had heart disease, which I'm sure was down to their smoking habit. My sister, too, has had breast cancer, but still continues to smoke. And rather than preaching to the smokers, which a lot of people have been doing, I'm hoping to address it from a different angle. And really pass the message on that smokers are being exploited over their addictions.
And how are you going to address this issue on the plinth?
I'm going to use a threefold, three-pronged attack, one of which will be to talk about. I'm going to open the talk with heroes, asking people who they consider to be heroes, either in fiction or non-fiction, and then perhaps throw some chocolates out for those who give me impressive answers. And guess what? I got heroes chocolates. And I'll then do some skipping to some music. And hopefully I'll encourage people to dance along to the song or mimic me skipping. And I've also written some songs for this campaign well before I knew about the plinth, which I'll be happy to sing a cappella without any backing tracks, so that's when I might feel the tomatoes coming my way. Well, I hope not.
And is this project one that you're working on outside of this participating in the plinth?
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, I often go down to the South Bank and do some skipping, and when people stop and ask me why I'm skipping, I'll tell them about it. I mean, there are a couple of times I've even been to the square and just unravelled an A1 sheet with a message to do with the campaign, and it's been met very favourably. So this would be great to get the message across the Atlantic and the Pacific and, well, globally.
And then how do you think the government should deal with the smoking problem?
I think they should really accept the fact that they can't one minute be preaching how bad it is for you and then the next minute allowing them to make it, sell it and smoke it and at the same time take tax on it. That's my sort of main issue really, and I would like to see the government taking more of a responsibility, rather like parents do over their small child. You know, we are, after all, under the government's care if you like. We have different departments that look after different aspects of our life, whether it's security, health, education, social welfare. And I think it's only right that they should be like our parents. And like parents, you don't always get what you want. You know, parents should give the children what they need. And sometimes you have to draw the line where this freedom of choice argument comes up. You know, we all like to look cool and we all like to look old, but I want to let the young people know that yes, it does make them look old because it prematurely is aging them, you know, and for the millions they spend on making themselves look nice and smell nice, all gone after one cigarette. So there are lots of different angles that I'm hoping to bring up during the hour, but I'm not going to talk solidly. That's why I'm going to intersperse it with my skipping and my singing.
And what kind of experience do you hope to get out of taking part in one another and standing on the fourth plinth today?
I hope that if it makes just one person think twice about picking up another cigarette or smoking in front of their infants, then it will have been worthwhile. But I'm hoping deep down that it will stretch perhaps as far as the White House, as far as 10 Downing Street, the Kremlin, you know, where the real power is. But I also want to tell the people that it's the people that have the power, it's the people that vote for those people in power. So ultimately, you know, we have the power collectively to make change happen. And you know, when people tell me that in answer to my dream, which is to just make tobacco history, you know, the making of it, selling of it, the smoking of it, I'm met with the answer, oh, it will never happen, it's impossible. Well, no one thought that we'd have a black African-American president in the United States, you know, and I know he's trying to give up smoking as well. So if this helps him to address the issue, you know, I mean, we have thousands of people dying every day in the wars, but people still don't realize that smoking kills more than any other thing in the world. And yet it's freely available over the counter, you know, and okay, the smoking ban, whilst welcome, has brought it out into the open. And although there is no more tobacco advertising allowed, the landscape that you see outdoors has become one human smoking commercial. You know, you can't walk down a street without having to inhale someone's out-breath of smoke. You can't see a movie or a soap opera like EastEnders without seeing one of the characters smoking. And there's a lot of subliminal advertising going on, which I think is wrong, and which, again, the governments fail to be, fail to address. And I think that they must be so pressured by the people who make donations to the party, and the tax, of course. So yes, I'm hoping major things will happen out of it, but at the very least, if it stops one person from smoking, that would be good.
Okay. Now we've spoken about what you're going to do on the plinth and the issue that concerns you, that you're going to try and promote and raise awareness for. Could we now say a little bit about you? And I'll ask that question very openly.
Okay.
At first, and I ask you to say a little bit about who you are as a person.
Right. I'm the youngest of three children. As I say, both my parents have passed away now. I'm the only son, and so I was pretty spoilt growing up as a child. Big age gap between my sisters and I, 12 years. And so I had a very, very happy childhood. I never thought for one minute the clouds of smoke being generated by my mum, dad or sisters would ever raise its head in the way that it has now. But you know, I can remember many times asking my mum why she smokes, asking my dad why he smokes, and asking my sister, you know, why she smokes, when we shared a room and I woke up with a huge cloud of cigarette smoke around me. And I think after that I developed a real passion for exercise and fitness and looking after myself. We'd all like to be better, taller, stronger, faster. At 5'4", I'm not going to get any taller, but all I can do is make sure that I, you know, respect the body that I do have. And so I don't drink alcohol, I don't smoke, don't participate in any recreational drugs or otherwise. I work as a PA in a law firm, but I'm also qualified to teach exercise and swimming, and I also do massage. I recently started volunteering for a children's charity called Chicks, who provide country holidays for inner city kids who are either child carers or underprivileged between the ages of 8 to 15 down in Cornwall, which I found extremely rewarding. And it was one of the other catalysts, if you like, to make me think that, you know, children are our future, and the more that we do for them, and the more that we educate them, the better it will be for the future. I like dancing, I like the cinema, I like travelling, I like exploring different cultures. Not very good in the kitchen, I'll openly admit, so I like eating out, and, you know, luckily I'm able to do that. And I have a small pocket of friends who I call real friends, and other, you know, lots of people who I've met throughout my life, and they have created the person that I am. I think we are all the product of the people we interact with over our years on Earth. And money can be won or lost, or made or lost, as has been proven in recent months in the city. And so at the end of the day, all you have really is in your head and in your hearts, and your integrity, and just who you are as a person. You know, take away the material things. You know, it's how you are with other people and how other people find you. That's important to me.
And what kind of experiences do you feel have shaped you? Any standout kind of moments in your...
There have been many. I think, like a lot of adults of my age, well, like a lot of males, we take a long time in maturing. And in some cases, we never really choose to. I've often been described as going through my second childhood at 48 years old, but I'm not sure if I've finished with my first yet, if the truth be known. And it's quite a nice feeling. My time on the children's camp has reminded me how simply they look at life, and how the simple things do bring a smile to their face or do make them laugh. And it's not about, you know, the value of a computer game or where they bought their clothes or where they went on holiday. It's purely about how they are as people. And I find that an amazing thing. And so I'd be looking to do more work with young people, so that they can see the life that that I can see.
And who are you doing this for today, being on the plinth?
For every human being who's ever loved someone or who does love someone, because I think that if anyone has someone that they love or who loves them, then they will want to do their best to protect those people by doing the right thing. You know, and as hard as giving up smoking is, I think that it will be for a great, great cause. And I think we can all be heroes at the end of the day. And it's so achievable. It is so achievable. It'll take years. It may never happen to see the Middle East war over, to see the war in the Gulf over. It took a long enough time for the Northern Ireland troubles to end. but it only takes a handful of people to tell the tobacco companies that their time's up, and that, you know, it's time for the lights to be turned off mm-hmm. in their factories, and for the shelves that used to occupy the cigarettes to be replaced with other things. You know, the sooner they're out of our vision, the better it will be.
Mm-hmm.
So if everyone.
Family history at all?
My parents came from Singapore. My father, like me, did a number of different jobs through his life. He decided soon after the Second World War that that London would be the best place to come to. He was one of four brothers. His other three brothers decided that the USA was for them, and my father, being a bit of a maverick, decided to go the other direction. It was a huge risk for them at the time because he wasn't a single guy as I am. He had a wife and my sisters were very young, and the idea of them being uprooted from their grandparents and friends and so on was immense. But my mother did follow on some years later, and I was the result of their reconciliation. And I think, being London born, they weren't quite sure how to raise me. My sisters, I've been told, were very strictly brought up and often punished physically by my grandparents, who I've never met or known. So I think that so long as I didn't get in trouble with the police, get someone pregnant, steal, take drugs, get drunk, or smoke, then it was pretty much carte blanche to do with my life as I chose. And to some degree, perhaps I've had too free a rein because I haven't pursued a fixed career in the way that my nephew or niece have. You know, my nephew's a doctor and currently training to be a plastic surgeon, and my niece, having already qualified as an ophthalmic person, optometrist, that's it, has now decided to teach primary school teaching. So she's recently qualified as a primary school teacher, which I'm very proud of her for doing. And but no, I don't believe we're all meant to be academics. I don't believe we're all meant to be astronauts or physicists. And perhaps this fight against the tobacco industry and the superpowers of the world who have the power to make the change is my reason to be.
Have you ever done anything like this before, taking part in an art project like this?
No, not at all.
So how about experiences in public, sort of being in a very public place and sort of performing or doing anything like that?
Well, I'm not shy in terms of performing. I think that as a Leo, born on the 5th of August, it's my duty to be rather outrageous and not at all shy. I'm often the first on the dance floor and last to leave. And I'm not afraid of sharing my opinions, but I'm also happy to listen to other people's opinions too, even though they may be wrong.
How do you like working for a law firm?
I'm currently working for a small law firm. They're very, very nice. I've worked outside contract quite a bit, so I get to see different types of practices. So I've gone from the major law firms, and if I can mention the name, Allen and Overy, were very good to work for. And now I'm at Riker Danzig, who are a small firm based in Cornhill. And being a temp, it allows me to do my best each day. I often draw the parallel that working is rather like a relationship, in that temping, which is what I prefer, is like being boyfriend to someone, whereas contracting is where you've moved in, and then once you sign the permanent job dotted line, that's matrimony, and that doesn't always bode well for me.
Okay. Why do you say that?
Because working on a temporary basis, you've got to give it your best. You know, I've seen so many colleagues that I've worked for who have been in firms for 10, 15, 20 years, and it can always wait until tomorrow. It can always wait until after lunch. It won't matter if they come in at 10 past their starting hour or leave 5 or 10 minutes before. And they just look very, very dissatisfied, and working purely for 2 days, two times of the month, which are payday and holiday. So I don't like to do that. I like to give everything I do my best, and by temping or contracting, I feel that they get the best out of me, because I'm wanting to impress every day, you know, given that any day could be my last as an employee, of course, not living, although that's true too. So, yeah.
And what's important for you in your life going forwards now?
Really to continue developing new interests, meeting new people. I've met some really nice people whilst being a spectator by the plinth, one of whom was kind enough to support me this evening, and even went to the trouble of travelling all the way to Finchley Road to get my music system, and we'd only really exchanged numbers 48 hours ago. So that's quite amazing. You know, there aren't many of my regular friends who I would trust to do that, or who would put themselves out in that way. So I'm very, very pleased about that.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add about taking part in one another and what it means to you personally?
Oh, it's... I think it's been an amazing project so far, and there's still more to go, I know. There have been a few occasions when I thought, I wish that person would do something rather than just sitting there or standing there or checking texts or speaking to someone on the phone. But then I have to sort of slap myself around the head and say, stop it. They have to decide what they want to do. I just try and respect that. But I think it's been great, because the tourists that congregate around the square have really taken it on board, and I gather as a result the viewing figures have really on the internet have like 100,000 a day, which is quite incredible. So I think it's a huge step forward. It's rather like it's become a new speaker's corner, even without having to shout over other people, and I could quite happily see this happening again, perhaps in a smaller, fewer days, or perhaps not in London. There'll only ever be one plinth, and I think it will be great compliments to Sir Anthony Gormley and all those involved with this project if it were to be replicated in some form in other parts of the world. And I've no doubt that it will, unless Sir Anthony's decided to protect his idea and preventing other people from doing that. But it would be a shame.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.